Press in those days was producing the NBC Nightly News, which was then the Brinkley Report. Chad is a marvelous producer, one of the best television producers I know. He now produces the CBS Sunday Morning News. And there is at NBC then what was called the North Shield Rule. And the North Shield Rule is designed to deal with some of this, trying to draw general conclusions from very specific episodes. And Chad's rule was that after you've written your script at Kayson or wherever else, take your pen and just cut the last sentence. No matter what it says, no matter how carefully you print it, cut it, and you'll have a better story, because the television correspondent is always tempted to go just one step beyond what the facts of the story will bear. And I tried to follow that rule. I didn't always do it. And sometime I think the North Shield rule should be expanded to say cut off the last two or three or five sentences of that story, and it would be even better. But even the North Shield rule didn't keep me and some of the others quoted here from saying silly things and reaching silly conclusions in our case on the record.
I think I'm going to go first and then let you answer everybody's questions. I have certain things as a historian that bother me. Again, I tend to agree with Peter that you cannot put on television news or television documentary complexity. I've had this argument with Larry also on a very recent series that they are doing on Project Vietnam. What I find that was not dealt with, why Kayson? Why was there a battle of Kayson? What was it next? What did Tet mean? What did Kayson mean? They were basic, somebody said they were symbols. Yes, they were, and they were symbols that were used by everybody that had a moment. It was used by the anti-military to say, it's time to get out of Vietnam. People who were in the Johnson administration used it, who were already tending to get out of, or opposed to the war in the McNamara, inner circles of the McNamara Defense Department, took it at this point to get off the boat and try to push Johnson away from Vietnam. It was time for the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Wheeler, who tried to use Tet to get Johnson to call up the reserves. For the Air Force, it was a time to use Kayson to bring single management of air into Vietnam so it could take control of Marine air. For Westmoreland, he didn't trust the Marine Command in the North. And it was time for him to establish Prav Corps Vietnam and put Abrams up there at Phu Bai, because he didn't trust the Marine Command there. The Marines started in August 1966, when Marine General said, when you're at Kayson, you're nowhere. But Westy wanted them at Kayson. Why? Well, Kayson, he did say he was hoping to be able to go into Laos. He was hoping that Johnson would change the parameters of the war. It wasn't going to happen. Why did, what isn't mentioned here, is when the siege ended on April 15th. Kayson still was established as a base until June. Why? Westy didn't want Kayson abandoned until after his tour of duty as Con U.S. MACV was over. As many casualties occurred during the 2 months between after April through June as occurred during the siege of Kayson. Peter?
Thank you, Jack. I was initially told that I would lead off and explain to you that what you saw was a fragment of a much longer documentary. I was asked to present no more than 60 minutes of material, and I chose to present the most narrative dimension of the program, that is the section dealing with the siege of Kayson. And your handout indicates by the circled numbers which elements I have included. I want to make clear, however, that there is a much broader scope for this visual essay, and that there's an entire section devoted to the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Saigon during the Tet Offensive, and that's examined in great detail. That there is a considerable section dealing with the famous or infamous incident in which General Lalonde shot the Viet Cong lieutenant in the street, and that is considered in great detail with television producers Thomas, the photographer who took the famous Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph. And so those are two other universes that are not touched on, except to just a suggestive hint at the opening of this particular production. There is another ingredient of the program which you've not seen at all, but just because of time constraints, and that is what was going on in the Johnson White House. How were people working in the White House perceiving the war, both, and this caused a real problem for some of them, the fact that they had access to official information on the one hand, on the other hand, they went home, they watched the war on TV, and some of them admit on screen they didn't know which was correct. That was perhaps the most frightening ingredient of our research. So overall, this is a much broader scope. I would like to say something else in the process that in our work, we were trying to examine the issues of the Vietnam War. We weren't trying to fight it over again. However, I must say that as a Vietnam veteran myself, who went to apply for a job in 1972 to a small New England college and was told by the vice president of the college that I was a goddamn war criminal because I fought in the war in Vietnam, that I have very strong feelings, as does Mr. Jamie, about the continuing impact of the recording of the war and attitudes toward the war. Not all of which, of course, are attributable to the press. There are many people in this country, obviously, who had serious, strong moral and intellectual convictions about the war and against the war. But one of the purposes of this program was to give the Vietnam veteran, the man out in the field, a chance to have his say about what happened, and then to explore by comparison and contrast the differences between what he saw and what others saw. I would like to add a point to reinforce or to agree with Dr. Lichty. As I indicated in this little paragraph here about medium and message, the purpose of our program is not to present the last word on the subject at all, but it is to present a text that can be used to explore issues which pertain to Vietnam, Vietnam reporting, our understanding of that particular tragic period in our history, but also to pick up lessons about critical viewing which could be applied to viewing stories or so-called bang-bang stories in El Salvador and elsewhere. So there's a lot here, and I must say that just to touch on a subject, I guess, that was part of the commercial that opened the talking section here, I urge you to look in the various research.